Welcome to this lecture. This audio is brought to you by schooldrillers.com. Name of this course and level, Psychology, 500 level. Course code, Psychology 594. Course title, Supervised Advanced Experimental Psychology. This is Lecture 2 of Psychology 594. The topic of this lecture is The Scientific Method and Psychology. Introduction. The scientific method is a systematic, step-by-step procedure psychologists use when conducting research. By following these specific steps, psychologists seek cause and effect relationships, which means that they can be certain, at least have a high level of confidence, that one variable causes an effect on another variable and that the results of the study are caused by the variable being studied and not some other, outside, extraneous variables. The scientific method is a systematic process that allows people to hypothesize about the world around them and draw relevant conclusions. The steps to the scientific method include describing the topic of study, making predictions, hypotheses, select a method for the study, controlling external variables, collecting data, running the study, analyzing and explaining the findings, and reporting and sharing the findings, usually via publication or lecturing. There are variations, but these are the basic steps in the scientific method. At the end of this lecture, you should be able to 1. Highlight the overview of the research process. 2. Describe the characteristics of scientific explanations or psychology. Now, let's study the main note in this lecture. You can understand this lecture better if you pay very much attention to the reading of this audio. You can always visit schooldrillers.com for more courses. Let's get started. All sciences follow a set of guidelines for conducting research, even though the methods and procedures vary widely. For example, looking at the fossil record in the Precambrian era to determine what kinds of organisms existed 500 million years ago is obviously different from measuring one's perceptions of their body image. However, despite these radically different topics, there are commonalities in the research process. The basic steps in the process are: formulation of a research hypothesis based on theory, testing the question, and making inferences based on the hypothesis test that relate to theory. Importantly, a vital component of this last step is making the research findings public. Within each step, there are a number of other steps, so you might see the same sort of process in a more complicated, thorough format. 1. Stating the problem. This is the first step in conducting a psychological experiment. The problem could be presented in the form of a research question. It has to be solvable and empirically testable. The idea could originate from challenges encountered in practice, problems identified in literatures. It could also arise as a result of a hunch. It is required that there should be a clear definition of variables to be investigated, even from mere looking at the research question or problem. 2. Formulating hypothesis. An hypothesis is a tentative explanation for phenomenon, used as basis for further investigation. It may be a reasoned potential solution of or a mere guess. The statement of hypothesis is what the researcher tests to determine whether it is true or not. Experimental data provides the most reliable means of testing an hypothesis. Hypothesis formation. A hypothesis is a testable explanation for a phenomenon. It is often described in terms of a relationship between variables or a predicted difference between variables. It is important to understand that an hypothesis needs to be testable to be a scientific hypothesis. For example, something like "I think dreams are an indication of what's in the unconscious mind" is not a valid hypothesis because it's not testable, nor are the definitions, for example, unconscious mind, specific, or, in the terms of research methods, the definitions are not operational. Generating a hypothesis. How do hypotheses come about? Are they just off the top of your head? Are they simply using intuition? The answer is that most good hypotheses are built on previous research and theory. For example, If previous theory has shown that the fossil record demonstrates a record of changing organisms throughout the Earth's history, you'd predict certain organisms in certain fossil records, depending on the age of the rock housing those fossils. In fact, that's exactly what geologists, biologists, and geologists have confirmed. If previous research has shown that we remember things that are different, or stand out from other things, a hypothesis is that most people would remember the word beer better than the other words in the list: oak, pine, maple, redwood, beer, ash, poplar, mulberry, elm, sequoia, fir. That's exactly what you find. This is called the von Ristorff effect. So remember, hypotheses are built on previous research and theory, not just off the top of your head. Conducting research begins with an understanding of past research. Then, unique predictions can be made in an attempt to A. confirm the theory, B. disconfirm the theory, which is much more powerful than a confirmation, or C. extend and refine the theory. Hypothesis testing. Once you have a working hypothesis, it then needs to be tested. Testing methods vary widely across sciences depending on the types of measurements and the tools used for those measurements. Instruments can vary from questionnaires, for example, depression or personality inventories, to electron microscopes to magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, machines. It is generally very good advice to use methods that others have used. The reason people do not want to reinvent the wheel is that it gives one another interpretation of your data. Specifically, let's say you have a good hypothesis based on previous research. You then develop a unique way of testing that hypothesis. Because there are two unique aspects of your research, the research question and the method, the results could be due to either your unique question or your unique method. Generally speaking, it is better to follow the footsteps of those before you and use pre-established methods of testing a hypothesis. Once you've decided on your method of testing the hypothesis, you then collect data. Every scientific study uses data. The data can come from many sources, including previously collected data, called archival data, or data you and your colleagues collect. Much of this methods course is dedicated to the various ways of testing hypotheses in psychology. There are two general categories of ways of conducting research: experiments and correlational designs. 3. Selecting participants. The nature of the research problem and the population being considered determine the potential participants in an experimental study. 4. Assigning participants to groups. In order to provide a basis for determining the impact of an intervention proposed or an independent variable, the participants recruited into the study should be divided into groups, so that members of each group are equivalent at the beginning of the experiment, and similar in all respects. This achieved through randomization. This is followed by the introduction of the treatment being investigated to the treatment or intervention group. The other group, that is control, is offered the standard or known treatment, or given a placebo. The use of a control group provides a basis for comparing the treatment. This is important so that the observation of the dependent variable recorded in each group would attributable to the effect of the independent variable, not chance or other characteristics of the group differences. 5. Controlling extraneous variables. One of the most critical responsibilities of an investigator is to assure that no variables other than the independent variable may affect the dependent variable in an experiment. If possible, extraneous variables are not controlled, the experiment is likely to be contaminated, and the post-test measures or outcomes would no longer be attributable exclusively to the independent variable, destroying the fundamental purpose of the study. 6. Determining the influence of the independent variables. This is the hallmark of experimental psychology. Following the process highlighted above, a baseline measure of the dependent variable is determined among both the treatment and control groups. Extraneous variables are controlled, followed with the exposure of the treatment group to the treatment being investigated. Thereafter, both the treatment and control groups are tested again to determine their score on the dependent variable. If there is a significant change or improvement among the treatment and control groups in their score on the dependent variable, it is assumed that the degree of variation is attributable to the effect or influence of the independent variable. 6B Stimulus Response Laws. Psychologists are interested in comparing the relationship between a stimulus and the response to the effect of the known stimulus. This is based on knowledge that if a pattern, characteristic of an environment is changed, it is expected that there would be a relative change in the behavior of an organism, person sensitive to the stimulus environment change. The event or stimulus that is introduced into an environment, which is expected to lead to specific changes in some features of the participants exposed to the stimulus, is called an independent variable. The behavior or organismic characteristic that is expected to change as a result of exposure to the independent variable is called the dependent variable. In a scientific study, the concept that the researcher is interested in studying are called variables. A variable is anything that could attain different values, for example, memory, intelligence. They vary in measurement. If a factor does not change, it is called a constant. If we are studying the effects of a new drug on memory, the drug is the independent variable, and the measures of memory are called the dependent variable. A discrete number describes statistical elements or variables that are distinct, unrelated, and have a finite number of values, or countable number of elements. A discrete variable is one that has finite number of values between any two points. For example, number of children in a family, or number of times a patient visits a dentist. A continuous variable is one that, at least in theory, can assume an infinite number of values between any two points. For example, an individual's height could take values such as 1.63 meters, 1.75 meters, etc. 7. Interpreting and publishing results. There are three main components here. First, you need to analyze your data. Second, you need to write up your research. Third, you need to make your research public, which then adds back to theory. A data analysis. Once you have your data, you need to analyze them. This means first putting into a form that is usable, usually in tables with codes, numbers and such, and then summarizing them. Looking at your data for what they are is called using descriptive statistics, using the descriptive statistics to make an inference about them. In psychology, the inference is usually made about a group of people that have something in common, that is, a population. Since you did not measure everyone in the population during your data collection, you have to infer something about them from the data you have. This type of analysis is done through the use of inferential statistics. B. Writing the research paper. Writing up the research is an important part of conducting research. It is not always necessary if there were problems in your methodology. B. The number of observations, that is, sample size, was too small, or C. Your results can't be interpreted. If your research does not suffer from many of these problems and you want to contribute to science, you must write up your results. In psychology, we have a very specific format for the research paper using APA, American Psychological Association, style writing. 8. Publishing the paper. This is one of the most critical components in science. Once the paper is written, and revised, it is then sent to a scientific journal. Journals come in many flavors, some requiring extensive analysis of previous theory and current research, for example, Psychological Review, others with strict criteria and extremely high standards for research quality, and still others with somewhat lower and relaxed criteria for publication. Often, journals have a certain focus, such as human memory, cognitive neuroscience, clinical psychology, applied social psychology, etc. Once you send your paper to a chosen journal, it is then sent out to a number of experts in the field who review and critique the research. This is the process of peer review and ensures that your research does not suffer from theoretical, methodological, or statistical problems. Once the reviewers have given their critiques, they make a judgment as to whether the research is acceptable for publication. The authors of the research then receive the reviews and the decision by the journal editor about whether the paper will be published. Usually, the research is not acceptable and the research paper, called a manuscript, is rejected. Sometimes, the editor will conditionally accept the paper if certain changes are made. Generally speaking, manuscripts are never accepted as is for publication when they are first submitted. If a manuscript makes its way through the review process and is accepted, it is then published in the journal, thereby adding to the body of knowledge and improving our understanding of that subject. Characteristics of scientific explanations. As diverse as sciences are, all scientific explanations have a lot in common. Psychological research, just like all other scientific research, adheres to these principles. 1. Scientific explanations are empirical. Empirical means based on the senses. All scientific explanations must be based on empirical observations or experiments, or at the very least, be directly inferred when direct observation cannot be achieved. 2. Scientific explanations are tentative. This means that all findings are subject to change should there be enough evidence to necessitate a change. There is always a chance that the scientific theory is wrong, no matter how much supporting evidence there is for the theory. In other words, nothing is ever proven in science. 3. Scientific explanations are probabilistic. Nothing can be measured precisely, there is always a degree of uncertainty in one's measurement. This is especially true in psychology because humans are amazingly complex. In psychology, keep in mind that any finding is what's likely to be true, but because of the impreciseness and variability in human observation, human behavior, and measures, we say there's only probability of a finding being true. 4. Scientific explanations are testable. There must exist an outcome that does not support the theory. An example of a non-testable theory is Freud's theory of personality. You can't test the id, the ego, or the superego. Thus, Freud's theory is not scientific. The same applies to dream interpretation, certainly not scientific. 5. Scientific explanations are parsimonious. If there are multiple theories that explain the data, the simplest one is usually correct. This is sometimes called the principle of simplicity. Here's a silly example that shows the principle. If I put on a blindfold and tell you how many fingers you're holding up, you can either explain this by A, telepathy, that is, mind reading, or B, that I cheated and saw your fingers. Which is the most parsimonious explanation? Clearly, the cheating explanation is much simpler and requires the fewest assumptions. 6. Scientific explanations assume cause and effect. For every effect, there is a cause. If we assume no cause, the explanation is not scientific. In fact, much of psychological research is about finding the causes of human behavior. 7. Scientific explanations are general. Scientific findings must be applicable to other situations, to other people, to other scenarios, in other locations, at other times, etc. This is called external validity. If the finding only happens once and does not apply to anyone or anything else, it's not scientific. We have come to the end of Lecture 2 of this course. Let now consider some revision questions that may likely come out in our exam. 1. Enumerate the steps in the research process. 2. Highlight the characteristics of scientific experiments. Can you answer any of these questions above? If you can answer it, very good. And if you cannot, just take a few minutes to listen to the audio again. Thank you. Visit www.schooldrillers.com for more audio and your PDF material.